You're listening to The Shauna Ray Show on News Talk 1290 CJBK. The number to call to chat with Shauna and her guests, 519-643-1290.
This week we are meeting the candidates in the riding of London West. And joining us is the actual leader of the party, the Freedom Party, and the candidate for the Freedom Party in London West, Paul McKeever. How are you, sir?
I'm well. Good morning, Shauna.
Good morning to you. And we apologize that we didn't fit you in until later on in the show. We know that there was a debate happening today, so...
That's right,
Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you.
Well, tell us, first of all, for those that aren't familiar with the Freedom Party, what is the Freedom Party, and how did it start, and what is the platform, I guess, for the Freedom Party?
Well, actually, Freedom Party, when it first was founded, right here in London West. They had offices in London West on Commissioner's Road. Of course, over the years, the party has developed. Originally, in the 80s and 90s, it was primarily there to act. You may have seen it more in municipal issues. When there was a garbage strike, Freedom Party got out there and made an effort to try and bring attention to that. But in 2002, an effort was made to start turning the party into an electorally based party, one that was actually aiming to win seats. And that was coincidentally the same year that I became leader of the party.
Mm-hmm. Why?
So, well, you know, I'm a lawyer by trade, I had been a lawyer for about 5 years at that time. And I said to them, you know, I'm all for, you know, lower taxes and a better life, but I want to make sure that if I'm leading a party, it's a party that actually aims at winning seats. I'm not in it to be an advocate, a lobbyist, or anything else. We have to win seats so that we can make Ontario a place where people can get more value for their money. And until you get into the legislature, that won't happen. So that's why we did it. That's why we started the process of transforming the party into an electoral one.
Why did you personally choose the Freedom Party to be involved in?
Well, you know, I didn't see a lot of difference between the progressive conservatives and the liberals, and I think that's particularly true this year. It's widely regarded in the media even that if you were trying to find differences between the liberal and the conservative platforms, you'd need, you know, a pair of tweezers and a magnifying glass. So what's really ended up happening is that the main issue that's divided them, tax funding for religious schools, has become the issue. And, you know, certainly we have a position on that issue, but our greater theme is that people aren't getting value for their money. And, I mean, my campaign slogan here is lower taxes, a better life. And we just think that by giving people the opportunity to choose the school they want to go to, but only to pay to that school, rather than to pay to a school they aren't attending. I mean, they shouldn't be paying for a private religious school that their children don't attend. We think that by giving people choice, but by ensuring that they're not paying for schools that other people aren't attending, or that the children aren't attending, that they'll end up getting value for their money.
So does that mean that they have to pay to go to public school? Is that what you're saying?
If their child attends public school, they would certainly have to pay to the public school. That's correct.
So then the government would not be funding any schooling, education?
Parents would continue to fund all schools, but not by giving taxes to the government first. In other words, we cut out the government middleman. The government would still own the public schools, of course. But if you chose not to put your child into the public school, then you wouldn't pay any tuition to that school.
Okay, so it's on a tuition basis then?
Oh,
basically.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And you're finding, and it's interesting, we were talking off air, and if you have a question for Mr. McKeever, the phone lines are open, 519-643-1290, star 1290 in your Rogers Wireless, that you're finding that at the doors, this is the big issue. And I hear from other candidates that, no, it's not a big issue at all.
Well, it's remarkable. You know, I went door to door just last Thursday with a reporter for the Free Press, and he was, you know, expressed some disbelief that, you know, is it really the case that people care all that much about having to pay taxes for these private religious schools? I said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first door I knocked on that proved my point. I said, are there any issues, sir, that concern you in this election? He goes, well, I'll tell you one thing. I don't think I should have to now start spending money on private religious schools. This morning, while I was waiting to attend the debate at Oak Ridge School, I got a phone call from a gentleman in town. He said he wanted to vote for me, but only if he knew my position on tax funding for religious schools. And I told him, and he said, well, then you have my vote. So we think we have a fair approach. Yes to choice, but no to making everyone pay for a school that their children aren't attending.
So eliminating totally any kind of funding to Catholic schools?
No, parents whose children still attend
Catholic
schools would still pay to the Catholic schools as they do now.
So you would be paying to a school board? Is that it?
Whether they choose to organize as a board or not would be up to the system, and I expect fully that the public and Catholic systems would remain exactly as they are. So, yeah, you would be paying the local board for your child's tuition.
Now, you're also finding that taxes are a big thing at the door.
Absolutely. Property taxes.
Okay. And what's your stand on that?
Well, we think property taxes are a very poor way to finance municipal services. I had a column in the Financial Post about this about a year back. And I think, you know, the McGuinty government has things half right in Toronto. They did extend consumption-based taxes to the city of Toronto, but what they didn't do is take away the power of the municipal government to impose property taxes. So what we're saying is it would take, if you look at the StatsCan data, it would take an average municipal sales tax of 5%, 5% sales tax premium collected on top of the PST to replace entirely all of the property taxes that people are paying. So, you know, in our view, when you buy your house with those after-tax dollars, it should be yours. You shouldn't have to keep renting it from the government at $300 and $400 a month. It's yours. Instead, when you go to the store and you buy some parts for your car, or you buy some bubble gum, or you take your family out for a meal, you then pay a municipal premium on that. And the other good thing about this is that if you consider towns, bigger towns like London, Toronto, there are a lot of commuters coming into town using municipal services, water, roads, sidewalks, you name it, and they don't pay a penny. Why? Because it's all based on the local municipal sales tax or municipal property tax. So you have Londoners paying not just for Londoners, but for out-of-towners who come in, use the services, and say goodbye at the end of the day. Our approach would say, no, if you're coming into town and you're eating at the local restaurant in London, guess what? You're going to contribute to London's, public infrastructure. There's no free rides for out-of-towners. And I think that's the fairer way to go. It would lighten the load for people living in town. And I think it would also ensure that when you're, 65 years old, 70 years old, living in a house you've had for 20 years, and suddenly everyone wants to move into your neighborhood and the property values shoot through the roof, you're not suddenly going to lose your home because your property taxes went up when you're on a fixed budget. So we think it's fairer to seniors, and we just know that it wouldn't take much to switch the form of taxation from property to sales. And let each municipality set their own rate. Some would be lower than 5 because they have a lot of volume of sales. For example, a town like London probably wouldn't need to have a 5% premium.
We're meeting the candidates in the riding of London West this week. Our first guest is the candidate for the Freedom Party, also the leader of the party, Paul McKeever. If you have a question for him, phone lines are open, 509-643-1290, star 1290 in your Rogers Wireless. Are you finding that people are talking about health care at the doors?
Not as much, interestingly. I think that's because, on health care, they think that all of the parties agree. The Liberals and the Conservatives are both fighting tooth and nail to prove that they're the ones who would not allow anyone to buy health services except with OHIP. But in fact, Freedom Party differs in that regard. We're saying, no, the problem with our system right now is that there's only one insurer, that's OHIP. And so the health care provider is only accountable to the government insurance plan. We think that by introducing some competition for OHIP, so that you could buy OHIP if you wanted to, price controlled, available to everybody, full compliance with the Canada Health Act. But if you didn't want to buy into it, perhaps you don't think you're getting your money's worth, you could instead buy a private health insurance plan. Or if you're young and healthy, maybe you think you'd rather spend your money buying a better house for the time being and get invested in health insurance later in life. So we're simply saying, let's introduce some competition for OHIP so that, the focus will now be on pleasing the patient instead of pleasing the government and the unions and et cetera.
What if you can't afford it? What if you can't afford insurance at all? Like, meaning that you can't afford OHIP, you can't afford the competition, then what?
Well, we're doing another thing at the same time, and that is, in Ontario, as you know, we always hear about foreign-trained doctors driving cabs.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're proposing, and I haven't heard this being proposed by any of the other parties, is that the government increase the number of certifications. So create new avenues of medical service, open up a category of medical professional for those foreign-trained physicians, because all that's really holding them back is the opportunity to go through their rotations at a teaching hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, they've got all the same, university training. So although you might not want them to be doing all of the same things as a certified physician in Ontario, they can certainly do many operations. I don't mean surgeries, but many of the treatments, many of the procedures that physicians could do. Nurses can do some. paralegals can do some, and nurses and paralegals have already proposed in the past and continue to propose that they be given greater authority to have their own clinics, to offer services. I mean, if a child falls off a skateboard and gashes their knee and they need six stitches, there's no reason to take that child to the hospital and wait for a physician to do the stitching. That should be something that can be done in a local clinic, perhaps owned and operated by nurses, perhaps owned and operated by well-trained paralegals. And that will mean that instead of paying at the premium medical physician rate for every service, you pay a lower rate because the service isn't really all that complicated. And we think that'll bring down costs considerably, leaving people the option of just insuring for the big ticket items. When you do that, when you're not paying premiums for physiotherapy and runny noses, when you're only paying for the triple bypass and for the cancer treatment, the cost of premiums will come down considerably.
I think that liability would be a big issue in what you're saying. And you said paralegal, but I think you meant
paramedical.
Nurse practitioner and that sort of thing.
Yeah, paramedical, sorry.
That's okay. Well, you're a lawyer, so that's probably why it came into it. But I can see liability. When you say somebody with stitches,
yeah,
somebody's going to have to diagnose that, oh, no, there's no infection in there.
Right.
Or, you know, someone with some kind of credential on their certificate is going to have to be the first person that they see.
That's right.
Then they can delegate doing the stitching, but still that person has to visit a professional who's been certified, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So then they would delegate it to someone else.
Well, you
said they shouldn't have to go to a hospital.
That's correct. And we think that by making doctors the only gatekeeper for something like a knee stitching, that's when we cause doctors to be spending their time on the wrong things,
mm-hmm.
and we're charging way too much for something that doesn't need that level of expertise. So yes, you would have to have appropriate expertise, but I don't think you need to be a brain surgeon to stitch up a knee. And so for that reason, maybe a nurse practitioner would be the appropriate. I'm not a medical professional, so I won't tell you which one is appropriate for each procedure.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the knowledge is there. The proposals have already been made by the paramedicals and by the nurses to open up those possibilities, those certification venues, and that's what we would ensure happens. Because when you make doctors the gatekeepers, they're overtaxed in terms of their ability to deal with everybody. It becomes a bottleneck through which all of the various patients in Ontario cannot pass quickly enough. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, in 2005, the Supreme Court of Canada said that we're rationing health care, and that as a result, people are needlessly suffering, even dying in waiting lists. And we think that's wrong. And the way you open that up is by letting the lesser jobs be done by people without the training for the big jobs, and therefore leaving the big jobs to the people with the most training.
Do you think that the doctors are really going to go for that, though? Because then they can't charge as much as they want to.
Well, right? You know what? I don't think there's any shortage of work, but I agree with you. I think doctors would probably be saying, hey, you know, will this affect my ability to charge, so much per hour? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they get to charge a lot of money for a 15-minute visit that really only took 2 minutes. We've all seen that. We've all heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to diss doctors. I mean, they're hardworking. They work hard. But the fact of the matter is there's so many people in need of medical service. This is no time to be saying, oh, the poor doctors. I think, the poor patients should be our focus.
What about the doctor shortage? Is this is one way of combating it. How do we get people, and this kind of leads into university and post-secondary education, how do we get those doctors to stay in Canada and in Ontario and practice here rather than going somewhere else where they're going to make more money?
We allow them to make more money.
Okay.
That's the only way to do it. I mean, you've answered the question by asking it. People go where money is. That will never change. You can't chain them to Ontario. Now, some people will say, well, if we've paid their tuition or we've contributed, and that's a fair argument. But maybe the real question is, should we be contributing to their tuition? I mean, if they're going to be making good money, they should be paying their own way. And certainly there are lots of opportunities for people in training for the medical profession to be working in hospitals and that kind of thing. So I don't think we need to be crying too much the blues about doctors at this point. There's a lot of sick and hurt people right now, and we need to do everything we can to increase the availability of medical services. If that means that we have to allow nurses to do some of the smaller jobs, then so be it.
What about some goodies that you have for seniors in your platform? I mean, they're one of the most vulnerable groups of people in our community, especially in London West. What does your party plan to do for them?
Well, the biggest the biggest goodie, if you want to call it that, is in that property tax proposal, because it's there that seniors are, I mean, literally there are people living in areas that become, you know, the Tony district that everyone wants to move into. Maybe the people who are buying the houses are expanding them and extending them, and all of a sudden this little bungalow that was purchased in 1955, you know, for $15,000. Yeah, and the lady inhabiting it, she's a widow, she's got a fixed income, a pension, you know, and she's just barely holding on with the groceries and paying the property taxes. Now, suddenly, someone gives her an assessment and says, oh, guess what, your taxes are going to go up $1,000 a year or $2,000 a year, and she actually is forced to sell the home that she's lived in for decades and move into, you know, an apartment, a nursing complex, a, you know, it's a shame. So, and the other thing is, they're paying for education. Their children have long since grown up. We don't think that seniors should be paying for education anymore. So we do that by switching that tax burden, getting them off of the property taxes so they no longer are paying taxes to own a home that they've already purchased. And instead, you know, they've got limited budgets. They're not going to be bearing the lion's share of taxes when they go out and purchase their groceries and et cetera. Let the people who have the money, who do the big purchases, who buy the boats, who buy the cars and the fancy, let them pay for those services through their sales tax, the municipal sales tax.
There is a program available through the provincial government called the Assistive Device Program, where as someone with a, say, physical disability, they need a walker, a wheelchair, visual aids, hearing aids, anything like that. The government will provide 75% of the funding if it is diagnosed by an occupational therapist. It's an expensive program. And if monies are to be reshifted in the healthcare system, that will be a vulnerable position for that service. Do you think that we should keep it, or is there something better that we can roll it into ODSP and combine the two?
Well, Freedom Party's approach on all such issues is, if we don't have a plan to change it, it remains the same until we have a plan to change it.
Okay.
And right now there is no plan to change anything of the sort.
Okay.
So all forms of social assistance, in fact, we have no proposal to remove or reduce any of those things. Whether you're talking tuitions, grants, welfare, they would remain the same. We have no proposal to change those at this point.
Okay. We are meeting the candidates in the riding of London West. Today we are joined by Freedom Party candidate, the leader of the party, Paul McKeever, and we will take your calls when we come back. You're listening to News Talk 1290 CJBK.
You're listening to The Shauna Ray Show on News Talk 1290 CJBK. The number to call to chat with Shauna and her guests, 519-643-1290.
We are meeting the candidates in the riding of London West this week. Our first guest today is Freedom Party candidate and also leader of the party, Paul McKeever. And we have a call. George has been waiting patiently. If you have a question for Mr. McKeever, that phone number is 519-643-1290, star 1290, near Rogers Wireless. George, go right ahead.
Yes, it's interesting. Listen to Paul. I like some of the things he's saying.
Good.
My main problem with all the parties is their accountability, because I don't see them dealing with child poverty. And also, I have an issue at, I don't know how people think, but it's basically the drinking age. I think it should be raised back to 21, because it does affect child poverty, health, and education. I think those should be the main issues. I don't hear child poverty as the main issue at all. So I just wondered what comments Paul had on these.
Okay, George, we'll let him answer that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, that's a good point. You're right. I don't think any of the parties has really talked about poverty much as an issue. If I could be cynical for just a second, it's probably the case that, you know, children don't vote, so they don't get their, you know, they don't get their issue dealt with. On the, you know, the drinking age thing, you know, of course, there are federal laws affecting that as well, but, you know, as long as I can keep my kids from drinking, the better, so.
it came up recently, and I talked about it, I believe it was last Monday, that there was a suggestion, and it was a letter to the editor, simply, you know, somebody saying we should raise the drinking age as well as the driving age. Because it seems like the younger folks are the ones that are having all the accidents. And it was a topic that came up, you know. Also, though, leading into that, John Tory has come out today and said he supports, you know, having liquor and beer in the convenience stores.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on that, too?
Well, you know, that you can. I remember as a kid, walking into stores. I never smoked as a kid, but I know that friends of mine did, and I don't think things have probably changed all that much. If you want cigarettes and you've got a little bit of peach fuzz on your chin, someone's probably going to, you know, give you a pack of cigarettes without carding you.
Yeah.
And so if you introduce liquor in the corner stores, I suspect we'll have similar kinds of problems. Now, all that said, I mean, we have to keep in mind that we have to draw the line at some point. And whether we think that the age of majority should be 18 or 21, it probably is best that we establish one age. I mean, majority means reason. It's the age of reason.
Mm-hmm.
If a person is old enough to go and fight for the country, then I think they should be old enough to drive a car, to vote, and even to drink.
Mm-hmm.
We could debate what's the best standard to be used to establish that age of reason, that age of majority. But I think one problem that we have is this, you know, there's different ages for everything. And clearly, if you're able to reason, you're able to reason. If you're not, you're not. And I don't think there's a need for a disparate range of ages. So maybe, hopefully, George, that answers part of what you were concerned about.
Well, let me ask you a final question. And this is for the people listening from London West. Why should they vote for you?
Well, I think right now there's a problem in London West. On the one hand, the incumbent, Liberal, Chris Bentley, in 2003 promised Londoners, along with Dalton McGuinty, that he wouldn't raise taxes one penny. And just months later, Chris Bentley voted in favor of a tax of $300 to $900 per person, depending how much you're making. You know, and now he goes around saying, well, it's because we didn't know there was a $5.6 billion deficit. Well, the fact of the matter is, there's a $2-some-odd billion surplus right now. That's not an excuse. He could cut the tax right now. So that's a you know, we were talking about accountability a moment ago. That's a lack of accountability. When you could say maybe you were faced with a problem and you had to raise a tax, fine. But then when you've got the surplus and you're unwilling to cut the tax, that tells me it was a tax grab. And Allison, nice woman. I don't think she's strong on the issues at all. And I'm happy to debate her anytime. I've been doing so and quite strongly.
Paul McKeever is the leader of the Freedom Party and the candidate for the Freedom Party in London West. We'll be meeting other members and candidates coming up this week. You've been listening to The Shauna Ray Show. Thanks to Ryan and Stephanie, who always do such a great job putting the show together. Remember, every day is your chance to make a difference. Get out there and do it. Bye for now.
Have you noticed?